in preparing for the, for this week's readings, I started getting a little nervous about the fact that this is not easy reading. This is not easy material. And I just felt like I don't want people to be put off by it in any way. So I wanted to start by saying a few things about how to read the how to be doing this reading, and this applies to TSK readings generally, it seems to me. You could think about it in terms of a field. After all, that's been our theme, our main theme so far these first few weeks, and you would say that ordinarily when you read material like this, you establish a kind of field in which there's the reader and the book, or the reader and the text. And there's a certain way of relating to the text. And different texts, you relate to in different ways. So if you're reading poetry, that's different from reading philosophy. And the way that this is written, it encourages you, I think, to think of it in terms of, well, more philosophy than poetry, let's say. But I would actually like to suggest that you reverse that you read this as though it were poetry. I don't mean to say it is poetry, but it's also not necessary or maybe even that productive to try to work out the argument. I think that is helpful actually, but I'll tell you exactly what got me thinking about this was I was starting to work with this material, thinking in terms of presenting it in the phone call this morning. And by the time I'd worked my way through the first couple of paragraphs, I had like, 2 or 3 pages of notes, and I started thinking, geez, I'm never going to be able to present this in a way that makes sense to people, and that's when I started to get worried. And I actually, I learned a lot from doing that. And I think you would benefit from thinking it through on that level. But if you try to do it that way and you find yourself feeling like you don't understand the material or feeling discouraged, just keep in mind that that's not the only way to do it, and maybe not even the most important way to do it. I one way to think about it, there's a lot of interesting sounds going on. One way to do it is to imagine that you were engaging the text as though you were tasting it. Where our other focus besides fields is the senses, the feel of the senses, and it's as though you were rolling the text around in your mouth, tasting it. So it's not as though you should just read it casually and then say, "Oh no, I don't understand it." That wouldn't be very helpful. But what I think is helpful is to just let it come in, and that's why the tasting metaphor, why I'm thinking that might be helpful. There's a whole lot here, and there are different ways of working with it, and I'm going to try to go into that some today, and as you read it and reread the text, because they're very short readings, I'd really recommend going through them a few times during the week. As you do that, I think things will open up, and then doing the reading becomes a practice, and that really is a kind of fundamental point about time, space, and knowledge, about the books that Rinpoche writes. Most of the time, you can pick up a book, you open it almost at random, you read a paragraph or two, and something begins to open up, loosen up, some different kind of illumination enters the field. Knowledge is being communicated in a particular, in a way that is not not conceptual, even though the conceptual comes into it. And that's really all I want to say about that. I think I'm motivated to say that out of my own concern, that I don't want people feeling that this is something too difficult. It's not. It's an invitation to explore different ways of understanding. So one way to get into that, which I've already suggested, or another way of phrasing what I just said, is that the reading is, the act of reading, not so much the words on the page, but you as you engage those, that creates a field. Ordinarily or more commonly, we're talking about the field of the senses, or, the field of seeing, the field of thinking, perhaps, the field of, well, these are not good examples, really, the field of acting. They're a little bit too general. But here, if you think about it in terms of the field in which you engage this material, the thing in general, the reason that we're looking at fields, and is that the alternative to fields, the way that we usually look at things, is in terms of subject and object, right? There's me and or I really should say there's I, there's the I, and the I engages a world out there of objects. And everything has an identity, which is another way of saying that everything has a label. Everything has been labeled in advance. And at the beginning of the reading for this week, Rinpoche is talking about the way things come out of the past, and this came out of this hap we talked about this last week too, and head toward the future, and that's there's a lot to be said about that. But in terms of fields, the idea here is that it's not so much the self having or perceiving certain objects or having certain experiences or thinking certain thoughts. That's our usual understanding. A field way of looking at the field mechanisms, the field dynamics, is an invitation to look in terms of the whole, not to look from the point of view of the self so much. And that's a big shift. The suggestion is that if you look in terms of a field, the field is pervaded by knowledge. Maybe a better word here, because it's the word that Rinpoche uses, is the field is pervaded by awareness. So it's not, here I am, the one who knows, looking out into the world or engaging the world and having these particular encounters with particular things. A field, looking in terms of a field dynamic, is a way of saying, no, the awareness which makes experience available pervades the field. The qualities that we can discover in the objects that we engage pervade the field. There is it's a different way of knowing. It seems to me, and I'm talking about my own experience here, that's mostly, something to play with. That is, when you start to look in that way, things may, you may say, oh, well, you have a little glimpse. But most of the time, you're going to stay in the usual pattern of subject and object. But at least having the alternative available to you, just to kind of explore in your experience, is a big shift. And that's really what we're trying to engage. And working with the senses is a very natural way to do that, and a fulfilling way. We've been doing the practice in the last, or in the first few weeks of the course, where we try to strip away the identity of the thing we're looking at and just engage it in terms of a kind of pure perceptual quality. And people have, you know, have commented on the nature of that experience, so I won't go back into it here. But it has a kind of a richness and aliveness. Well, I guess I'm going back into it. It has a richness and an aliveness, a sense of calm, a sense of openness. It's a very easy way to begin to see what it might be like to look, you know, either you could say to enter a different field in which objects are not objects, but more kind of pure sense experience. That's one way of thinking about it. Or saying, you know, really challenging the usual structure where there has to be an object so that there can be a subject, there has to be a thing so that there can be an I who relates to the thing in whatever way the I likes to relate to things. So, you know, at the very beginning of this chapter, Rinpoche says that the interplay that takes place in the field can be seen most directly in, he says, in the operation of the senses. And he says, you know, it's also there in thoughts, it's also there in emotional reactions, but it can be seen most directly because, you know, the thing about sense experience is that, excuse me, by definition, it takes us outside ourselves. We're engaging the world. And so we have to engage a field, you know. And that's one of the reasons we're focusing on the senses. Now, later in the course, we'll have much more to say. You know, toward the end of the course, we'll be doing reading that really focuses directly on the senses. Right now, it's more a question of exploring this this field dimension. So, what Rinpoche says at the beginning of the reading here is that a field of perception, and that's what we're talking about, you know, if you say, well, I'm going to look in terms of fields, not in terms of subject and object, what shows up in a field, or what are the characteristics of a field? And just in this first sentence, he says, any field of perception in operation encompasses certain qualities that are reflected in awareness. So what you find when you look in a field is that there are qualities and there are awareness, and the two are related to each other. And you might say, well, that's just a funny set of words for talking about subject and object, but it's really completely different. And that's the point, you could say. Instead of a thing that possesses attributes, there are qualities that pervade the field. And instead of someone who knows, there is an awareness that pervades the field. So I like that word pervades, because that really is where we're trying to go with this. We're trying to turn away from a kind of subject-object, noun-centered approach. And come to something that's much more alive and dynamic. You know, there was a thinker who died about, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago named Buckminster Fuller, scientist, designer. I don't remember his background too well, but he wrote an autobiography, and he called it, I Seem to Be a Verb. And that's a nice way of thinking, you know, and it takes us more in the direction of what we're looking at here, the aliveness of what happens when you look at a field. By the way, in preparing for the session, I went and looked at something that I look at from time to time. You know, the term field has a lot of different meanings and has great significance in physics, also in mathematics and certain other areas, but especially in physics. And I did some reading around. Every time I do that, I think, well, it's kind of interesting, but I don't see how it relates. But I'm just mentioning it here in case any of you would like to look at that. Maybe some of you have a better background. I'm sure some of you have a better background in science than I do. And maybe thinking in terms of how a field operates, how physicists understand that, Maybe that will help you get a handle on what fields are about. But for me, it's not a particularly illuminating approach. But we all have our own ways of getting into this material. So up to you. Now, what I do want to look at, I'd like for us to try to do a couple of short practices in the time we have, and I know I've already taken up a lot of our time, but I'd like for us to do a couple of short practices. And the first is based on the end of the first paragraph in the reading. He's talking about the interplay of qualities and awareness and how that shows up in the senses. And he says specific rhythms are at work, as well as specific relationships to time, to space, and to knowledge. So what he's doing is specifying, that's what the word specific is there for, I guess, specifying areas in which we could look if we want to take a field-centered, a field-oriented view of the world. So he says that within a field where you discover awareness and the quali and qualities and awareness and qualities reflect each other, within that field there are rhythms at work and there are specific relationships to time, to space, and to knowledge. And then in the next sentence he says these rhythms and relationships manifest with different degrees of intensity. So he's identified rhythms, relationships to time, space, and knowledge, and degrees of intensity. So what I'd like to have us do for a couple of minutes here is, in a very relaxed way, without trying to find something specific, because that would be, the moment you start talking about things and finding things, that's we're all definitely subject and object. So now, in a very relaxed way, let experience arise, and just entertain these possibilities that what you will find in your experience is rhythms, a certain way of relating to time and space and maybe knowledge, and degrees of intensity, which you could think about as, like if you're playing music or listening to music, is it loud or soft? That's kind of degrees of intensity in one particular dimension. So, rhythms, relationships to time and space and knowledge, and degrees of intensity. Just letting those be the shaping qualities without trying too much. I'm just trying to, I want to repeat the terms so that they're kind of there and available for you, and then just see what comes up. Rhythms, relationships to time and space and knowledge, and degrees of intensity. So let's practice like that. Let's look at that. Practice is maybe too big a word. Let's just take a couple of minutes to look at experience in that light. Okay? Let's go. I'm going to turn off the video. But I'll be back. Okay. So I invite your comments, spoken or typed, on what you discovered in doing that. What seemed interesting to you, or what seemed boring, or what seemed opaque, you know? Anything at all.
It's Caroline.
Yes.
I don't connect with the question about knowledge. The time and the space was easier to see.
Okay. I actually in setting up the I mean in giving the instructions, I was trying to kind of put knowledge in brackets because I think in a way that is more difficult, partly because you could say we are knowledge is pervasive, you know, we it's kind of built in. It's difficult to identify it in the same way that we can identify the space dimension and the time dimension. I'm not sure. Anyway, you know, in a practice like this, whatever part of it speaks to you is fine. Did you have something specifically that came up when you were looking at space and time or those dimensions?
No, not that I can speak about.
Okay. That's fine.
At the moment, I'll think about that.
Okay. So one thing that struck me in doing this practice, and I don't know if this is kind of it seemed to me to have to do with space, but in a sense it has to do with knowledge also, was there was some there was sound, there was some particular kind of whooshing sound that is coming from somewhere in someone's environment. Here with all the different people who are participating live. And then at a certain point, there was some honking outside where I am. And I thought, you know, what a strange when you talk about the field and the space of the field that we're occupying right now, it's such a strange field because I don't know how many people are on this phone call, say a dozen or 15 or something like about that. So, you know, roughly speaking, then there's 15 different spaces to which we all have a certain amount of access, and yet at the same time, or the other side of that is that my space here is your 14 spaces, you know, in one dimension. And then my immediate physical environment, and they all get kind of married together. It really makes you think a little differently about what space is, because it certainly seems accurate to say that I'm connected because we're all on this phone call together, that I'm connected with the space that each of you occupies, and in some sense, it's part of my space. You know, that's not to wander too far afield, but I think that that's the underlying issue with cell phone use in cars and why it turns out to be dangerous. It's because we're trying to occupy two different spaces at once. It's rather difficult. Okay, anybody else want to say anything? What about the rhythms dimension, the rhythm side of this? There.
Again,
Yes.
this
Yes.
what I was thinking or just wondering was, pre-set up or notions and commitment, how that is coloring and everything. Thinking and looking at space, and the thought of particular rhythm can form and the soul will get deformed because of their knowing will way that they perceive how that's already forming and setting the limitation.
Okay,
So
wait, I'm going to stop you there. This is very challenging, Sudha, but because for some reason it's just you're just barely understandable, something about your computer connection. So I'm guessing at a lot of your words. It sounds like I should be able to understand them, but I can't quite. So, but you're talking about the way our commitments create certain limitations in our experience. Is that's at least part of what you were saying. Is that fair? Okay, well, I had to guess a little bit, but I don't have anything in particular to say about that, except I guess that, you know, it's true that when you look at the field, what you discover is a field of, you know, that has certain built-in limits. You know, as Rinpoche says here, a field of perception encompasses certain qualities, and those are reflected in awareness. And our awareness has one has an impact, and it sets limits. And the qualities of the field have impacts and set limits, and those things support each other and sustain each other and limit what's possible. So Shruti has a comment in the chat box, looking at the so an awareness of a particular rhythm in this field, and she calls it a tranquil rhythm, in distinction, in contradistinction to the frenzied rhythm of experience during the week. Well, I think that is the kind of rhythmic possibility that one can explore. And it would be really interesting, you know, I mean, it's easy enough in a sense to look back at your week and say, that was so frenzied. You know, that's a kind of a description that makes sense. But if in fact you were tuned in to the rhythm during the course of the experience and able to relate to it more in terms of the field, and then maybe also looking in terms of how it's connected in a specific way to time and space, that might give you a very different perspective. And that's one of the things, it's certainly worth exploring. Bruce has a comment here saying that looking in this way or doing this kind of, focusing in this way led to a feeling of immersion. And I'm reading these things because not everybody's online, so not everybody can see this. So I'm kind of trying to summarize. Yeah. Attending in this way led to a feeling of immersion, which dissolved into echoes between various elements or dimensions. And you were focused on hearing, Bruce, but there were also other fields that came in. So yeah, that's interesting. I mean, the notion of echoes is you know, it's a different description. It's a different dimension, you might say. Rinpoche talks about reflection, right? Awareness is reflected, there are qualities that are reflected in awareness. So reflection is a visual image. Echoes is an auditory image. And, you know, it's interesting to think, well, what's the difference? If one of those is the dominant mode, you know, the fact that you used echoes, Bruce, seems to relate to the fact that you were focused mostly on hearing. If one of those is dominant, how does that change things? I wanted to bring that up. I'm going to move on, but I wanted to bring it up because I think that, you know, this is a very immediate way of exploring what it's like to look in terms of of breath. Oh, okay. I'm going to come back. Tina was trying to post some comments, but they were private. So you'll try to fix that, I guess. And Pat, okay. So there were rhythms here that relate to the body, and that's going to, that's going to be natural for some people. You say rhythms of breath and heartbeat, and then thoughts and body sensations of pulsing and tingling, and you're connecting that up between with maybe with your experience with yoga and the fact that body is central. What I find is that for some people, the body is really salient, the body is really central. And for other people, other people are more involved in their thinking, other people are more involved in their emotions, and so on. So when you go into this kind of experience, you might say, well, it depends partly on what the field of experience is for you. And that's fine. So Tina has a few comments here. Yeah, sort of moving away from a thing dimensionality, a thing orientation in terms of time and space and knowledge. And you give a very lovely example here of being able to feel within your being the trees outside your window swaying and dancing, a meshing of rhythm and waves of the ocean. I'm going to leave those different images. I mean, I'm not going to try to go into those too much. But rhythm does seem to lead. One of the nice things about rhythm is it takes you toward time. It takes you away from space. And substance has to do with space. That's a little quick, but that's what I'm going to say right now, and then move on. Okay. The reading, as I said, you could really analyze this reading. There's a lot to say about it, but I'm not going to go into the specifics of what he says, kind of at the bottom of 375 and 376. What I want to go to instead, what I want to look at and let's see how much time we have. Not so much. In the second full paragraph on 376, he's talking about what happens if we focus on the field. And that's what we were essentially just doing, using the guidance what he says in this chapter. So he says, focus on the field might let us explore by occasions. By departing from the usual interpretations, like a scientist with new equipment, who could run a new set of experiments, we could investigate physical reactions, emotional rhythms, we could expand or contract the data available, choosing from a variety of methods. The point here really is just that looking in terms of fields, we can let go of our commitment to the usual labels we have for experience, right? So for instance, if you have an emotional reaction, let's say you're feeling anxious, or let's say you're feeling upset or angry or whatever it is, if you look in terms of field and you let this particular description guide you, but there are other descriptions in other places in this book and in other books. Instead of saying I'm feeling anxious, maybe what you tune into is the physical side, the sensations in the body, the beating of the heart, if there is a sense of rhythm or pulsing, for instance. And I'm just giving you a specific example. I'm not saying that's what you should do at all. It's just a possibility. And really what we're talking about here is shifting the field. The fact, as soon as you recognize that there's a field in operation, the possibility is there for that field to shift. So I said before that some people react more on the emotional side, other people react more, or in the emotional dimension, let's say, other people react more in the physical dimension, And you could try playing with that. That would be an example of what Rinpoche describes here as running a different experiment, right? So the limits, the thing to keep in mind with TSK is that we're not just trying to come up with some cool new way of thinking about things. We want to challenge or question or undo the limits on our experience. We want to go beneath our ordinary way of using the mind and using the senses. And all of that is shaped by the field that's in operation, and that includes ordinary consciousness. So I want to give you an example, and then I want to, let's see, we're not really going to have time to do this. Let me give you the example. It's from an article that we were reading in a different class that I'm teaching, but it's certainly related to the senses. The article talks about three different ways of working with sound, and I think they'll be pretty clear to you. They're related to the kinds of things we've been talking about. So first you hear a sound and you label it. You immediately hear it. So I heard, for instance, when we were practicing, I heard the honking of a car horn. Well, that's just what I heard, a car horn honking. I didn't hear some particular frequency of sound or something that would be, could be described differently. If I were a scientist, maybe I'd think about it that way. But what I heard was the honking of a car horn. That's the first level. The second level would be to go to the level of the sound. And to really do that, I might have to strip away the identification of it, and just be able to hear a sound. And one way to do that would be, if you think about the field of hearing, the auditory field, there's always different sounds coming in. I mean, that actually is part of what I described before. There was this whooshing sound coming from the speakers on my computer, ultimately tracing to one of you, so it's coming from somewhere in the world. And there was the honking sound. And, if I heard that as a kind of a whooshing honking, the identity of the two would soften up, would loosen up. And so that would be one way to do it. So that's the second way of hearing sound. Now the third dimension that this article points to is instead of focusing on the sound, we could focus on the experience of hearing. And that actually takes us more into the field dimension, because that, if you start to say, well, what is the experience of hearing the sound? It makes a lot of sense, it seems to me, to think of it in terms of rhythms, for one thing, and perhaps, a kind of physical embodiment. Other dimensions of the field, in other words, come into play. So that's just an example that I think might be helpful, again, in showing us how we could move towards sound. What I want to do, let's see, again, we are out of time. The discussion in the chapter then goes on right after the part that we were reading about different ways of perceiving time and space. Let's look for a moment at what it says at the bottom of 376, about five lines up, talking about our present limitations. It says those are based on field intensity and feel. So in other words, when you go to the field, you find an intensity and a feel. And these other words we've been using, like rhythm and time and space, those are all related to that. And he says, since those are determined by the field, we ought to be able to go beyond that limitation, that determination. And then he has some things to say about how you could approach time and space in doing that. We don't have time to talk about that, but I want to give you an exercise that begins to do that by focusing specifically on space And it's an exercise that is in the book, the Knowledge of Time and Space. It's given as an exercise. It's on page 188 of the book. And I'll describe it briefly here, and then I'll post it as part of the orientation for next week. But I had hoped we'd have time to do it today and during the phone call, but so it goes. So the basic idea is very simple. Instead of focusing on an object in space, focus on the space within which the object appears. And one way to do that is to go to the edge of the object, the place where the object is, you might say, in contact with space. Now, of course, it's also true that the object itself is occupies space, or maybe that's not the best way to say it. You could say it's filled with space. So it's a little bit artificial to say, well, there's the space at the edge of the object, because the object itself is just space, or it just fills space. Nonetheless, it's an important and useful distinction, I think you'll find if you work with it. So that's my suggestion, is during the week, work with that. Take a look at the exercise on page 188. I'll post that reference. I'll probably even just post the description of the exercise there too. And then we'll talk about that some more next week, and we'll go on and work with the rest of the chapter. But we may go back and look at this section starting at the bottom of 376, where Rinpoche says, if you want to challenge the limitations imposed by the field, you could do that in terms of time, in terms of space, and then the rest of the chapter really is in terms of knowledge. So we'll look at that next time.